Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everybody to the program this afternoon. I think we're going to have some fun today because I have invited my husband, Stephen Craig Ariste, to be a part of the show. But before we put him on the phone and he and I start telling our story, I wanted to remind everyone of a couple of things. First thing is I run a very powerful support group for adults in the South Bay in Torrance, California. The group is Wednesday night from 7:30 to 9 at the Center for Learning Unlimited. And the cost is $5. And the address is 2785 Pacific Coast Highway in Torrance. And I would hope that everybody that's listening that's in the area would please come by. It's a very powerful group. We're doing a lot on emotional individuation. We've been spending the last 2 weeks on self-awareness, which, of course, is always the first step in getting better, and I think that has been a very exciting time for all of us at the group. We're going to continue that for a couple of weeks. Also, what I wanted to mention is that my book will be out and available probably the second week in November. The book is called The Gift of ADD, ADD Land. The reason we say ADD Land is because a couple of years ago, when I noticed that some of my adolescent clients were just a little depressed about having the diagnosis of ADD, I used to tell them, as I still do, that the Hollywood sign should say ADD Land because there wouldn't be a Hollywood without ADD. So it's a fun book, and for anybody who wants to order it, pre-order it, you can go on my website, missadd.com, and pre-order it, and we'll get it to you as soon as it comes in. So I want to welcome to the program now. I'm going to have him pick up the phone. He's also my producer, so he's got two hats on today. And this is Stephen Craig Ariste. Say hello to this.
Hello, hello.
Okay. So Stephen and I have a long story. It's a really powerful story. It's a great story. We met, it'll be 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. It'll be 4 years, December 3rd. At a Starbucks up in Palos Verdes. Both of us had been on Match.com, and he winked at me. And so we started to email back and forth, and then we decided that we would meet. And the funny thing is, when we did meet, we found out that we lived literally down the block from each other. We could have thrown a ball to each other's house and hit it. It was very close. And initially, when I first met Steve, he was a little nervous about that, thinking that possibly I was one of his stalking ex-girlfriends, but I wasn't. So I guess from the first day we met, we really connected, and we had a lot of fun. We laughed, remember?
Oh, it was great. It was we sat down for, I think we had...
3 hours.
Yeah, well, we didn't intend to do that.
No.
We just sat down to talk and to meet over coffee, and it just clicked. It just, we communicated great. It was, you were bright and intelligent, and I enjoyed talking with you, and...
Thank you.
And it just before we knew it, we looked at the clocks. It was like, oh my God, we've been here this long.
Right. We were together for 3 hours, and then I'm not going to go step by step through the relationship, but this is that night. In the late afternoon, I sent him a text message thanking him for the time we spent together. Told him how much I enjoyed it, and he invited me to the movies that night. So we went out again.
Right.
We went to the movies, and so the interesting thing is that. Initially, when I first met Steve, and I was doing a lot of work on myself at this time, I had just come out of a very bad situation where my ex-husband had been cheating on me, and I was not a victim, so I was learning how to take responsibility for my part in that relationship, in that marriage. And actually, when we met, I discovered that Steve had just come out of a similar situation where his ex-wife had cheated on him. So we were more or less listening to each other's stories and saying, oh my God, this sounds like the same person, only one was male, one was female. So in that way, we did have a lot happening. But I noticed the first day we were together, he did a lot of talking, and it was very kind of nervous kind of talking. And I thought to myself, wow, this guy's very creative, because he, of course, had been in the music industry for years and the entertainment industry. And I'm wondering, geez, this guy ADD. So I thought, I'm just going to step back and watch this and see what this is all about. Because I had told him that I had ADD and that I was running a support group and that I was an MFT intern and was doing therapy and coaching, but he never said anything to me about that. So our relationship was really a friendship for 3 months.
Exactly. Well, that's primarily what I was looking for. I wasn't looking for a love relationship. I wasn't looking for any of that. I was looking for just someone that I could spend time with, because I had just, at that point in my life, I was done.
Right.
I mean, I was just so done with relationships with that become romantically inclined. I just wanted to find someone that was bright, intelligent, that I could have fun with, and that was the most important thing.
So we dated, and it was more of a friendship. We never held hands. We never kissed. We just went out and had a good time. We went to the movies, and I really enjoyed that as well, because I was looking for more of the same thing that he was looking for. So we went for 3 months, and finally after 3 months, I remember going to my therapist, and he was asking me how things were going, and I said, well, I really think that probably this is just going to be a very good friend, you know, forever. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, I really don't think he's attracted to me. And he said, well, why do you say that? And I said, because he hasn't tried to hold my hand or to kiss me or anything. He said, well, do me a favor, go home and ask him. When you get home, call him up and ask him, is there sexual tension in this relationship? So I did. I went home, and I asked him, called him up and asked him, and he said, yeah. And I thought, okay, I must be really ADD, because I'm missing all that. I hadn't seen it. So from that day, then we decided to take this in a different direction, and we did become intimate. But here's the interesting part of the intimacy that I want to share with everybody, and I think I might have shared this in another podcast on relationships and being an adult. And I really felt that I was an adult for the first time in my life, and I had had 2 failed marriages. He had had 3, so between the two of us, there were 5, and we were convinced that we were never going to get married again. Many times people with ADD do have multiple marriages, and now that I've lived this myself, I believe that a lot of it has to do with not being emotionally individuated and growing up. So I had done that work, and I was grown up. And when we decided that we were going to be intimate, one of the things I did say to Steve was, you know, if we are intimate, I can just tell you that I'm not going to be being intimate with anybody else. But if you want to, that's okay. And you were shocked.
Yeah, I was blown away because I'm thinking about when I need to say, if I need to clean anything up on this.
Okay.
Anyway, when I'm thinking that, I was just shocked, because usually people, once you have a relationship or start to have a relationship with you, they literally behave as if they own you.
Exactly.
And I had been owned for 18 years.
Right.
And I'd been owned for 7 years before that, or not 8 years before that. I'd been owned, and I was done being owned. I was so happy to have, to be free.
Right.
And so often in my life, there would be times I was so busy dealing with other people and their situation that I would think that, oh, someday I'm going to have the opportunity to do all these things that I want to do, and I won't have to ask anyone's permission. I won't have to worry about somebody else fitting into their schedule or something like that. It was just so I was very apprehensive.
He was apprehensive. He also didn't believe me when I told him mm-hmm. that if we, you know, were intimate with each other, that it was fine if he wanted to go out and try other women. I'm sure there's a lot of women that are listening to this that are probably angry at me, but you know what? That's what an adult does. You don't try to tie somebody down just because you're intimate. And, you know, there were two things I asked of him is if we were going to be intimate and he was going to go and you know, have sex with somebody else, that he either use protection or just tell me about it so that I knew about it. And there was a lot of openness between us. So we did, and it was amazing, and we were having a great time, and lo and behold, it never did happen. We both eventually came off of Match.com. That was probably another 2 or 3 months after we were intimate, and we were having, you know, we were just enjoying each other.
Right.
And then he started to bring over to my apartment pictures from his past, which I thought was great. And also one night, the more time I was spending with him, the more ADD I was seeing. But again, he was actually coming to my group on Wednesday nights and enjoying that. And I think you were saying to me just this morning that you heard me talking to people and it would trigger things.
Well, a lot of times I'd hear you talking to people and I'd be saying in my head, oh my God, that's me. or especially when you were talking to parents about their children or talking to the parents about 504 plans or IEPs and
right.
the various problems they were having in school. And as you're talking about these problems that these children are having in school, I'm going to myself, oh my God, this is every problem I used to have, you know? And, you know, I kept hearing more and more and more.
Right. And so when he brought over his pictures, he also brought over his old report card.
Well, there was an envelope in there because my mother had put together this booklet years ago of all these baby pictures and adult pictures and just family pictures growing up. And there was an envelope in the book
right.
that was filled with all my report cards.
And so as I was reading these report cards, I started to laugh, and he said, what's the matter? I said, you really needed me when you were going to school. Because the classic things were written by the teachers, can't sit still, can't attend, doesn't bring his homework in, you know, is missing a bunch of assignments, doesn't focus, all the things that I'm sure all of you listening have heard. If you have children from your child's teacher, and I'm sure that his mom and dad, I mean, this was back in the Stone Age, they didn't know what ADD was back then. Some people were called hyperactive, but nothing was labeled attention deficit disorder. And that's exactly what happened to me in school. I had the same comments on my report card. So, you know, I very, you know, kindly and carefully started to talk to him about the possibility of he being ADD, although I was excited about it because it's a gift. And I could see his gift because he's just so incredibly creative. And then the more we talked, we discovered that your son and Alex, you know, had been tested and he had had some dyslexia.
Dyslexia problems, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then Stephanie, his daughter, who is the age of my son. So let me take a step back and introduce our kids.
Right.
So we have five children together.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So Steve has Alex and Olivia. Olivia gave us a grandchild recently.
That's correct.
And she's married to James. And Stephanie, who's my youngest, Mike, who's 22, is my youngest, and Stephanie and Mike went to school together, which is so funny because the first night that Steve and I went out, we texted the kids, and they both knew each other. And then my oldest son, Chris, who's 26. So we have all these kids now, and it's wonderful because we have a wonderful family. But as all of you listening can well imagine, it was a very difficult transition for the kids because we had both said that we were going to be single and we weren't going to get tied down. And so we moved in together in June of 2010,
right.
which was
right.
a little while after, not a little while, but probably 7 or 8 months after we had met.
Right.
And then the night we moved in together, we didn't know that much about each other in terms of what we had.
Well, we didn't know what we'd had because I was living, most of everything that I had was in storage. I was living at my father's house because I was still going through my divorce, and we moved into my father's house, Stephanie and I, so that she could finish high school.
Right.
Because we couldn't really move out of the area.
Right.
And so I was going through that, and so everything, I had no furniture there.
Right.
It was all, you know, and then you had no furniture because
I had a little bit
in
my apartment.
Yeah, in the apartment. That was it. So we literally had no idea what either of us had as far as furniture, plates, silverware. I mean,
well, we knew what I had because everything was in the apartment that you were more living with me at the time.
Right.
But I didn't know. I didn't see you had seven tables.
Right.
And so the night. And
well, I didn't know I had seven tables either. I just had stored a bunch of things.
And so the night that the moving men came, we're in a three-bedroom apartment, and I'm watching them move this stuff in thinking, okay, where are we putting this?
Because you were at the apartment that we had just rented.
Right.
And I was at your old apartment helping organize that being
right.
Everything leaving there. And then I think earlier that day, first I met them at storage. And
right.
They grabbed a bunch of stuff in storage, and we didn't have much time there to really sift through. So I would just say this bin and that bin and that bin. I mean, I had three storage bins at the time, and I just didn't have time to go through them. So I just told them, take all that stuff. And then, or I think I just had two bins at the time. Anyway, and then you had the stuff at your apartment. So I immediately ran over to your apartment and helped them pick that, you know, organize that. So as that was all getting organized and packed and moved out, there were movers moving things in at the apartment that we were moving
right.
into, and you, that's where you were.
And I was completely overwhelmed because all this stuff was coming in. You know, there was file cabinets, and I was like, oh, my God. I just had no idea. It was really interesting. It was so ADD of us. We did not sit down and really talk about what was coming, but we laughed. And through the entire hour and a half, you're going to hear that the way we live together and have such a tremendous relationship, that so much of that is based on humor, because
right.
we really laugh a lot. We have a lot of fun, and we always talk about being gifted, or you have the gift, or, you know, case in point, we were going out this afternoon prior to the show, and we went downstairs to switch some things in the two cars, and as we were backing out, Steve's door in his car was open. I said, honey, you left your car.
I had specifically gone over and locked the door, and then jumped in the car to back it out. And you jumped in the car, you were driving, and when you backed out, and you went, honey, you left your door open. I'm looking, and there's the back door wide open. Huh? On the other side of the car, I didn't even look. You know?
See, but if you can laugh about these things, and this is where people get into trouble. Other people would have gotten very angry and had to start chastising that person and saying, you know, are you stupid? You left the door. I thought it was very funny because this is how a creative mindset operates. We are up in our head at times, you know, with things that we're thinking about. Not negative thoughts, because I don't do that. I just notice my thoughts and they go out. But other things that I may have to concentrate on, or he is very creative and is constantly thinking about creative things that he's working on or doing. So that was pretty funny. I thought that was pretty funny. So we moved in, and with us that summer, we had Stephanie and Michael, who were both home from college. And this was a transition for everybody living together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I first met Steve, one of the things that I recognized, because I had been enmeshed with my older son, that I recognized that there was some enmeshment between he and Stephanie, and reason is understandable. She had had a very difficult time with her mom, and growing up, Steve was the one who was really there for her, and even kind of left his career for a while to stay home and make sure that she was okay, because his wife, Stephanie's mom, was off making a living. And so I noticed that, and I saw it, and I was trying to help him in a very kind, loving way to see what was going on, and even suggested that he go to my therapist to talk to him a little bit about it, which he did. And Steve's a very quick study. He got it right away and realized, wow, this isn't going to help her in life to find, you know, to have a very strong marriage someday, a relationship.
Because I was so busy doing everything for her. I mean,
exactly.
When I say doing everything for her, she'd ask me for advice, and I would give her the answer, and not only give her the answer, give her steps on how to do it, and then walk her through it, and if she couldn't do it, well, then I'll do it. It was just crazy. So
yeah.
I realized pretty quickly that wasn't going to help anybody, least of all her.
Right.
In any way.
And so we had a pretty interesting summer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it was difficult. It was interesting. We had fun, but it was also different because prior to moving in together, any time that we had in the old apartment, in my apartment, was alone. So we weren't dealing with family.
Right.
We were just dealing with each other.
Right.
So we made it through the summer, and the kids went back to school. And, you know, both my boys were skeptical of what Steve's motivations were towards their mother because they had just lived through a terrible divorce, not even divorced yet, a terrible separation. And, you know, their stepfather, who they knew from age 3.5 and 7, you know, cheated on their mother and kicked them to the curb along with me. And, you know, again, I have to say I did take responsibility for my part in the failure of that marriage. I was a child. I put all my feelings and emotions onto him. I didn't handle things well. I couldn't regulate my emotions. But I worked on all that. I worked on all aspects of that, and I became an adult. So now we're in this adult-adult relationship because Steve, the same thing with his marriages, he wasn't the perfect victim. He looked back on his marriages and recognized that he had married his father 3 times.
And she looked different, but it was him every time.
Right. And because he was trying to make that relationship right. And that's what we sometimes do, our psyche wants mm-hmm. us to do. And so now things were very different. And what I noticed was that he would want to do things, and he would ask me or talk to me about it in kind of a nervous way.
Mm.
Because in the past, ported, right?
Well, yeah, because I have to tell you, for years of not feeling like if I discussed something with my partner at the time, if things didn't happen exactly the way they thought, the way it had been discussed, then right away it was my fault or I was a failure. And I'm used to doing things, and this may sound strange, but in the business that I was in, we did impossible things.
Right.
We would do, and so when you're planning to do something that has never been done before or trying to do something, that's really different, the outcome's not always going to be exactly the way you think it's going to be. It will be a number of other ways, but at least you're always making headway. So to me, success wasn't completing the project necessarily, but it was making the proper headway because as you walk into the unknown, you learn.
Right.
And as you learn more things, then you have to adjust where you're headed to get to your ultimate goal.
Right. And,
it's not clear cut.
And when you're dealing with people that are insecure themselves, they tend to project that back onto you.
Well, that's the other thing. That's why it's very difficult to have conversations. It's hard to talk about. I never would talk about things I planned to do because of that very reason. Because
right.
they would project that sense of, well, I don't think you'll be successful with that.
Exactly. And so my definition of love, after really believing that this was probably the first time in my life that I really, really loved another person, because I really understood as an adult what love is for the first time. And You're welcome. And my definition of love was being able to get behind somebody that you love and watch them soar, whatever they want to do, how they want to be successful. And then that love comes back to you tenfold. So there's no selfishness. And that's in the Bible, you know, in Corinthians, it's love is patient, love is kind, love is never boastful, There is no jealousy. And that's what love truly is. It's all about those wonderful positive things. But many people mistake controlling for love. And I think you and I experienced that
right. In
our marriages, especially my last marriage and your last marriage, a lot of controlling things that,
right. You
know, and the both of us not feeling good about ourselves, especially with the ADD. My ex-husband would say things to me in the morning like, hey, take your happy pills. You know, he was very negative about the symptoms,
it was also a really great way to keep you down, which I had similar situations myself. So,
right.
And we allowed that to happen.
We most certainly did, and that's why we're not the victims. But what Steve was amazed at, I think, in our relationship as it grew, was that I never told you what to do or questioned what you were doing. I just supported you.
Well, not that, but, you know, I didn't have to ask permission, which was really interesting because I almost, in the other relationships, it almost was where I had to ask permission to do something.
Right.
And so a lot of times I never would ask because I didn't want to have to even deal with that. And
right. So
it would just get put off for later. I would do it, I won't do this now. But and the other thing that was interesting was I could tell you, like, for example, if I had to do something that just had to do with me, I'd say, hey, look, I'm going to go do this, whatever it was, and I'll see you later. I mean, it wasn't a matter of, like, you're not invited. It's just
right. You're
not invited,
right.
And I'm not even going, because this is something I need to do, and I'll see, you know, I need to go do this or have this appointment or go to
right. This
function, and I'll see you later on.
Right.
And that was it.
And I think one of the things that was very different for me in this relationship that I loved was that we weren't constantly checking up on each other. Like, we could go a whole day. We might text each other once to say, I love you, but we didn't talk.
Right.
And it was great because by the time we got home,
we had plenty to talk about.
We had a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. I can never understand why people would always be checking in with
right.
you or wanting you to check in. That was always the worst. I was always getting in trouble. You didn't check in. You didn't call me. Well, you know, why would I be calling you? I know where I am. I know where you are. You're doing whatever you have to do, and I'm doing what I have to do, and we'll talk about it when we get home.
Right. And one of the things that we've learned together is that there were times when I would get home here and you weren't home.
Right.
And you didn't tell me that you were going out.
Right.
And so I didn't freak out, and I didn't start calling you 25 times, which I did used to do in the past, not to you. But when you did come home, I told you how I felt.
Right.
I said, could you do me a favor? When you leave, if you're not going to be home by the time I come home, could you just leave me a note? This
right.
is another very funny ADD story.
Right.
Or text me. Let me know. And so I came home one night, and this was about a month after we had this discussion, and
right.
he wasn't here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 6:30, and I realized the dog was home alone, so I hadn't been fed, so I fed the dog. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where he was. So I waited, and I kept calling, and then I realized when I was calling his phone was off. So, oh, okay, he must be at the gym. So about 2 hours later when he came home, I said to him, you know, I just wanted to talk to you. I'm going to get upset about what we had discussed. And he said, what? And I said, well, you left and you didn't leave a note. He pointed up to the door. Top of the door jamb, and there was a note.
A big note.
A big note.
I think if I put it there, how could you not see it? How could you possibly not see it?
It was so funny because I had totally missed it, and he had done what I asked him to do,
right.
which was wonderful, and I really appreciated that. So we had a laugh about that.
Exactly.
And again, you know, other people who are an adult would get angry. You know, he might have said to me at that point in time, you know, can't you look up? You know, can't you double check when you come in to look around for notes? And, you know, and I could have said, well, you could have texted me, but there was none of that. We just laughed and we enjoyed the fact that, which is a very ADD thing to do. But anyway, so it's those kind of situations, and we've got more to talk about, of course, that have really helped us to develop our relationship. And so so going on from there, we were together, I guess it was in January that he called me at work. Oh, and here's the other thing that was happening at that time. I was getting my hours towards
right.
my license.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I was working at a methadone clinic with heroin addicts and opiate addicts, and I had to be up every morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had to be there at 5 a.m., and I got home at 1:30, and then I was still coaching. So it was a real crazy time, but I can't ever remember us ever to this day having a fight. Do we have discussions?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they've never been even heated discussions. We just talk about feelings
right.
and how we feel.
Exactly.
So in January now of 2011, he called me at work one day, which is not usually what he ever did, to tell me that he had had a checkup at the doctor, and the doctor didn't like his PSA number, which for those of you who don't know what that is, that's related to the prostate. And so he was going to have a biopsy done the following week and wanted to know if I could take him. And I said, absolutely. So we went over to UCLA, and he had a biopsy done, and yes, it was cancerous. And so we had a meeting with the doctor there, and I really didn't like the arrogance of the doctor. I don't like entitled doctors who really don't care to hear what you have to say. It's all about them. So I just picked him up and said, Steve, come on, we're going to City of Hope. Because I had, when my son had his tumor, which was benign, but we had a doctor at Children's Hospital who was now at City of Hope. So we went over there and we met with the surgeon. He was the head of the urology cancer unit.
Right.
And the surgery was scheduled for March. Now, for those of you who don't know about prostate cancer, it's a big deal for a man because basically they take the prostate out, life as you know it changes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so we went through, it was difficult for me because I was concerned about him. And one of the things that I think you appreciated as we went through this whole process together was that I never made it about me.
No, you didn't.
I didn't worry about,
unbelievable,
you know, my sex life and what was going to happen. I was concerned with him, and anytime he would get sad, I'd say, you know, I didn't marry, you know, your Johnson, I married you. lived with. We weren't married at the time. We were just life partners, but I always felt like we were married mm-hmm. from the beginning. So that was a hard time. I mean, I think that the fact that we made it through that time, as I look back on it, because we were pretty new in a relationship.
Right. Well, I know. What? How long? I mean, how long had we been together?
Probably a little bit more than a year.
Yeah, maybe.
And not even living together for mm-hmm. a year.
Right.
And you went through a lot of anxiety and emotional
right.
stuff, and it was very difficult. But you know, we took it one day at a time. I was home from work with him for about 2 weeks, took care of you, and then had to go back to work. And you know, it was hard coming back for a while,
right.
but you did well. And he's been cancer-free now
right,
since 2011.
Years,
yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, which is really great.
This all sounds very down, but we're trying to tell people.
No, it's just what I know it's not down because we even laughed during that time.
Oh, yeah. We've
been, we could tell you some very funny stories that we're not going to tell you that. But,
anyway.
But we did laugh, and we found the humor in a lot mm-hmm. of things, but we were also very...
Well, you want to know something? Just to move along a bit. The thing that I found was really interesting was is that as I heard you speak about ADD and as I heard you talk to other people who had ADD, what would go through my mind is I would think, well, wow, that's why I create all these little systems for myself. Like, for example, one of the first things I did when we moved in here, the very first thing
that's
I
right.
did was I looked online and you said, what are you doing? I'm trying to get a key rack.
It's
and
so
I
funny.
Bought a key rack that actually has our name on it,
yep.
and it's right next to the front door. And I would do things like this, and this isn't the first key rack. I mean, everywhere I went when I lived on my own, when I lived in an apartment by myself, the first thing I did was put a key rack because I always wanted to know where my keys were.
Right.
And I just it was just little silly gimmicks like this, little systems that I would create for myself that would force me to stay on track. Because
right.
otherwise, I would find my keys in the refrigerator.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I would lock them in something.
Right,
or,
and I did
know?
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
So this was little things like that. And just, yeah, having little systems that we would create for each other. Now, an example of one of the things that I do, like, and we both do different things that for ADD couples, we both do different things that are important to us but may not be important to the other party.
Right.
Like, for example, one of the things that's important to me is every morning I make her bed.
Right.
And when I'll never forget you saying, hey, if you expected me to be the one doing
no,
that every
no,
morning.
No, no. I said, if you expect me to be Donna Reed
that
at
was...
3 o'clock in the morning, forget it. That's not happening. Yeah.
Right. And so, and I said, no, I don't expect you to do it. This
right.
is something that I just like it myself.
Right.
So that's just one of the little things. Now, does it bother you that I do that?
No, I love
yeah.
it.
But this is just a thing that I do. I'm never looking to you to do it. It's just something it's my thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think with ADD people, as they have to understand there are things that they do, each party would do, that's their thing.
Right.
And you just have to accept it.
Right.
You know?
And one of my things is I love to have the kitchen clean at night.
Exactly.
So my deal is I'm the kitchen cleaner because I clean it. See, and here's a perfect example. For some reason, Steve doesn't clean pots and dishes the way I do.
No.
Okay. I was raised in a very strict Italian house where my mother, God bless her, she's still alive, 93, she taught me how to do the dishes. And you don't leave anything on a dish. And there were mornings that I would come out because, God bless him, I had to go to bed to get up at 3, so he would do the dishes. And I would come out and look at these dishes that there was still some food left on them, and I would have to move them over and do them again. But I never made him feel less than about
right.
it. I never went after him. Mm-hmm. I never yelled at him. I never said anything to him. Until recently, I just said, you know what? When there's pots and stuff, even if I'm not, you know, if I come home and it's late, just leave them. I'll do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained that, you know, I'm more attention to detail.
Right.
And it makes me feel better when everything's completely clean.
Right.
That's my thing.
Right.
Right? It's not yours, but it's mine. Not that you're by far not anything close to being a slob.
Right.
But, you know, usually men, you know, most men don't do dishes like women do.
Right.
It's just something that's instilled in us. But I just really want to make this clear to everybody who's listening is that's my deal. So that doesn't mean that I have to put my stuff back onto him
mm-hmm.
and make him feel less than or bad about himself because he doesn't clean the dishes the same way that I do.
Right.
And that's where people get into trouble with couples that I work with. It's one couple is always telling the other couple. I mean, one member of the couple is telling the husband or the wife, you don't do things the way I want them done, or you let this slide. And it's criticism.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what ruins relationship,
right.
is criticism. What helps relationships grow is love and laughter.
Right.
The two L's.
Well, and then being supportive of the other
right.
party, because, you know.
And that's the thing I have to
allowing
tell
you. Allowing me to do what I need to do.
Right.
And you know, that's really important.
Right. And that's the other thing that I really have to share with everyone is that this man is the most supportive person when it comes to what I'm doing. He's excited. He goes out of his way. He's always there on Wednesday nights. He loves the group, but he's there to put the chairs out for people and collect the chairs and put them back where they go. With my book coming out, he's been on the internet sending out press releases all over the place. He's involved in my show every Sunday. We truly have a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what so many people in relationships, whether you're living together or you're married, don't have.
Well,
they
not
don't.
That, but we're also able to talk about anything.
Anything.
I mean, anything. I mean,
right.
There was a, I was, you noticed that, and, you know, you notice that I was sad, and it's interesting. We're always able to just kind of read each other.
Right.
And so you notice that you're sad, and I said, well, yeah, I'm sad, and I started to explain. It has to do with the business situation that I'm working on. And it has nothing to do with her,
right.
But yet I'm able to share it with her, and I don't have any criticism. I get someone who's listening to me, someone's going to listen to all the details, and then offer me a suggestion or sometimes nothing. Just listen to it and just
right.
go, oh, well, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Right.
And just be supportive like that. And I do the same thing for her.
Right.
This
you know,
is really important.
In another example of this kind of support is he had a situation that went sour for him a little bit in something he was working on.
Right.
And I think he was a little concerned that this person that he had been working with kind of screwed him when it came to money.
Right.
And I think he was concerned to come and tell me because the other people in his life would have gotten very angry at him and blamed him, whereas I said to him, this isn't about you. This is about the other person. This is not a good person.
Exactly.
And so we learned from that. We mm-hmm. ask each other all the time, what did we learn from these mistakes that we make? And we have the gift, so we make mistakes. You know, I laugh. Usually my phone isn't an issue. I always have it with me. My keys are always there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other things that when I get stressed, you know, I may forget. I may leave my book home, but I'll come home, and he doesn't make me feel like, oh, look at this. You left your book home.
Oh, you left your book here again?
Right, exactly. It's like we laugh about it and say, you know, it's the gift, and then I figure out how to make that right for myself so that the next time I'm not always – you know, running around, I put them in the same place so I
right.
know where they are, so I pick them up before I leave. So we're learning together
mm-hmm.
skills that are really powerful for a relationship. And when I work with couples, and I do all the time, I share with them a lot of what our success
right.
has been.
Well, yeah, little things like I work out of the apartment.
Right.
Okay, so because I work here, I'm here most of the time. Occasionally I do leave, and when I do leave, someone has to take care of the dog, and I, you know, and you pick up
right.
where that, I mean, without question.
Right.
We have a list in the kitchen of when people realize, one of us realizes that there's something that we need.
Right.
You'll write it down, or I'll write it down, because it's not just you writing it down, it's me writing it down, because I'll forget.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
And then so that when I do go to the market, or you go to the market, you'll bring the list and buy the things that we need so
right.
that we get them, you know.
Well, you do a lot of that, picking up that slack, because I'm out of here a lot.
Right.
I'm working with clients a lot. Today, case in point, I went to the office early this morning. By the way, I'm moving into a brand new office tomorrow, which I'm excited about. I had been using my supervisor's office, and it was great. I appreciate that time. But now I've got an office of my own because as my clients increased, then I have it 24/7, which
mm-hmm.
is great. And I asked Steve before I left to post the show
right.
to all my Facebook groups and LinkedIn
right.
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it had been written,
was
the show.
Well, you posted it yesterday.
Right. It was actually Gazelle.
Oh, okay.
Who posted it. She's great. She's our marketing person. She's wonderful. She laid out the book and my brochure.
Mm-hmm.
Very talented girl. And she posted my show as saying, listen in tomorrow, which
right.
is today.
Right.
So when I looked at the post that Steve had done, he had left the tomorrow on there.
Right.
So, you know, you really have to stop and think and say to yourself, you know, how would I feel if this was me who did this, you know, and another person attacked me? I'd be devastated, right? Because
right.
you were doing me a favor. I mean, you know, this is my show, and you were doing me a favor. And so you put tomorrow, but you put the time of the show.
Right.
And I, you know, for a second was a little like, okay, well, maybe I should change it. But then I just left it alone and said, you know what, it's fine. It's going to be okay.
Right. People will figure it out.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the point is that you, I think, learned from that situation to, you know,
something. I read it, and it all made sense to me, but it didn't click.
Right.
Sorry.
Right, and that's the gift, because,
And then it wasn't until later on in the day when I was, because basically you have a bunch of Facebook groups that you're part of, and
right.
I have a separate group,
right.
And I figured, well, I'm going to post it on mine, and I started to paste it, and I read it and went, wait, that doesn't make sense, it's today, so I changed it out, you know, and I thought, holy crap, I did, oh, well, I'm not going to go back in and say, oh, by the way,
it's today,
it's today.
No, and it's fine.
But it says Sunday, so
right.
We're fine.
But it's just an example of how we don't go attack each other.
Right.
That's the point, because what's in the back of my mind all the time is how incredibly supportive you've always been about me. So I want to go back for a minute. So after we made it through the prostate cancer
right.
and the surgery, we just kept moving on. I mean, we've been developing
right.
the business, and
right.
you've been incredibly supportive with the podcast, and
right.
we're talking about YouTube videos and the book and, you know, trying to get me on radio shows to talk to people. And
mm-hmm.
I really have a message that I want to get out there to let everybody know. And our ADD symptoms haven't gotten in the middle of all that.
Yeah.
We just keep moving
mm-hmm.
forward. You're doing a lot of your own stuff as well
right.
in the entertainment world.
Well, you helped me in a lot of this because, see, when you have a whole lot of stuff, I mean, when you basically said to me, you know, and this is what you say. You tell your kids, you,
right.
when you, the kids that you work with, they have like a little file, and they have different colors. And,
right.
and so what she said is, hey, maybe, do you ever think that maybe if you've got little spiral notebooks for each project, that might help you keep track of stuff? And I thought, holy crap, that's a great idea. So I went out and got a bunch of stuff. So
right.
now I'm able to really track about 6 or 7 different things at the same time that I'm doing.
Right.
Which before, I would keep it all up in my head, which
right.
is great in that I can do that. But at the same time, things slip through the cracks. And I'm really good at hyper-focusing, which
right.
is another thing that I recognize that I never realized what a gift it was
right.
that I could sit down literally and work on a project for 20 hours straight. It's not a problem.
Which we've both found out is not the best way to work.
No, it's not.
So what I help Steve understand is the difference between time and task.
Right, exactly.
So we talk about how much time something is going to take.
Well, now that I have all these projects, see, it's great to have to be able to focus in on something, but it's bad when you have 7 projects because you're focused in on one and all the rest of them go flapping in the wind. So this is way based upon what needs to be done and the time I want to allow to that, I'm able to figure out, okay, so I've got these different projects I'm going to work on today, and this is how much time I'm going to allow for each one.
Right.
And I'm able to organize it that way so that when the time comes, I stop and take a break, or I stop and take a break and then move on to the next project,
right.
a different project. I'm able to change gears, and this is all really important stuff. It's really
right,
helpful.
Because I think what you're noticing, too, is that you're getting more done.
Well, yeah, I actually see headway.
Right.
And it's not just headway on one subject. It's headway on 7 different projects.
Right.
So
that's how, you know, that's how we help each other, which is really great. And it's not helping in a codependent way. It's like I ask, hey, is there something I can do to help you?
Right.
Or I also say, you know, I'm noticing
right.
that you seem overwhelmed.
Right.
Right?
And which is great because, see, being that, and that's something that we do for each other, when we see each other getting, either of us getting overwhelmed, usually the other one recognizes it. You tend to recognize it more than I do. Of course, that's your business.
Right. But you have noticed it with me. And I also feel a freedom, which I was thinking about this morning driving to work, which one of the best parts of this relationship is the freedom that I feel to come to you and say, hey, either I'm upset about something mm-hmm. or I'm feeling overwhelmed.
Right.
And I can talk to you and you don't try to fix it.
Right.
You just listen. You know, you've been incredibly supportive with my boys
mm-hmm.
in helping me to stay connected in a very positive way.
Right.
And not try to do everything.
No, that's true.
Like I helped you with.
Right, you've helped.
Definitely.
We've helped each other. You know, and one of the things, just to go back to the kids for just a second, one of the things I said early on to Justine, because in the very, very beginning, she kind of wanted me to get involved in a situation with one of her children that,
right.
that I didn't feel comfortable with.
Right.
And I told her at the time, but she went, oh, no, no, I really want you to do it. And I did it, and it worked out just as badly as I thought it would.
Right.
And so after that, I said, you know, that didn't work out well, and this is the reason why. And look, your boys have gone through a real tough time.
Right.
And they don't know me, and in time they're going to get to know me.
Right.
But you can't make them know me. And so we're just going to have to – you're just going to have to relax with that. Because as far as they're concerned, I'm the guy who's sleeping with their mother.
Right.
I mean, that may sound harsh.
Not
but,
anymore.
But little boy, but for boys,
right.
this is they look at their mother and they love their mother and they
right.
want to protect their mother and this is what they're,
right.
they're seeing. So.
But as time went on, that situation
well,
got better.
It developed.
That was in the beginning.
Right.
And now that we're married,
right.
it's a completely different.
Right. But
situation.
It is. But even prior to our marriage, I think it was you were already seeing, and I've seen.
Right.
Our relationship. I mean, I have a relationship with both your sons.
Right.
Independent of you.
And I have relationship with your children independent
exactly.
of you.
Exactly. And that's what we tried
right.
to
right.
develop.
And that's something yeah. I tell clients of mine all the time when I do family system work, okay? And I talk about dyadic communication, which is two people talking directly to each other, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because many times what happens in families, especially...
Your mother's going to get you.
Right. That's a triangle. That's a triangulation where you have the child on the top point and the two parents on the bottom, and the kid is playing the two parents like a fiddle. And so, you know, one of the things that I say to parents, and sometimes this can be a difficult concept, you're like to the father. Your relationship with your son has absolutely nothing to do with the mother.
Yeah, and you can't speak through the other person.
And they have a hard time with that,
mm-hmm.
especially families that are not healthy, where there's, you know, screwed up boundaries, there's either rigid boundaries or enmeshment, where you've got an identified patient, which really isn't the problem, it's the communication in the family. And so it's hard for people to really get that concept of there's relationships between two people and only two people. And my relationship with Stephanie has nothing to do with you.
Right, exactly.
My relationship with Stephanie
mm-hmm.
and your relationship with the boys. And so we're really good about allowing each other to have those relationships.
And we're also really good about not communicating through, like, you don't ever say to me, or I've never said, you better tell your boys this,
no,
or you better
never
tell
do that.
One of them. I mean, that never, ever happens.
No.
If I've got something to say to either one of them, I mean, granted, we may discuss it.
Right.
But I will tell it directly to them.
Right.
Just as you've done with my kids.
Right.
You know?
And the thing
that's
is,
the important thing to do.
They've all been respectful. They've been, even from the very beginning, there's been a lot of respect.
Uh-huh.
It's been very nice. It's been kind. You know, it's been difficult, but we got to this great place where we're at now, and we got a wonderful family, and we've got all these kids that have attention deficit, so can you imagine how much fun we're going to have when they all start having kids and they're all ADD? I'm going to have so much fun with all these creative kids.
Well, I think it's great, though. It's so much fun when they're all here.
Right.
Like for Christmas and stuff like that, oh, my God, we've got people leaving everything going and on, and people leave lights on and, you know. And,
yeah.
And get in the shower before Mikey does because he'll get in the shower and be on too long.
And then they use the good towels instead of the ones in the closet.
You know, you'll put out good towels. You'll put out the regular, you know, towels for the family use. You've got the good ones left up there, and they leave those old ones where they are and use the good ones.
Right, because, you know, they're ADD, and
yeah.
they can't see past their nose. No, they do.
So.
They all do well.
Yeah.
They all do well, and it's all a process, and we're very kind and, excuse me, and understanding and helpful, I think, with everything that they're going through.
Right.
You know, and but we have a really great life, and we also have another member of our family, Enzo, our little doggy, who's, you know, just added to the situation.
Well, I think dogs are definitely ADD because he's...
Yeah. Yeah, but he's a very well-behaved dog. And what I've learned from Steve, because in my last relationship, I had a standard poodle that was just completely crazy. He was actually on an antidepressant. And so much of it was because he was smarter than everybody in the house, and he was running the house. And
I think a lot of it also had to do with chaos. I think animals are very sensitive to that.
And we didn't train him. You know, whereas this guy Enzo is very well trained. You know, he's a great dog. He really is. And you have a lot to do with that because you're very consistent. And that's the thing. I don't mean to compare dogs to kids. I really don't. But when I work with parents, the most important thing is consistency. And, you know, there's no yelling and screaming. It's kindness. And it's, you know, showing love and compassion, but setting up boundaries for your kids and following through on those.
Right.
You know, if you tell your children, if this happens, then this is going to happen. For every action, there's a reaction, the law of physics.
And you got to follow it through.
You have to definitely follow through.
Right.
And so, you know, we talk about relationships, and the other night, Steve and I were watching a movie, and there was a quote in the movie that I have to share with everyone because it really speaks to my and Steve's relationships in the past that really weren't the right relationships for us. And I'm not going to go after the people on the other side because that's not what we're about. But this quote is, we accept the love we think we deserve. And I can speak for myself in saying that that had a lot to do with the people that I ended up marrying.
Well, I think a lot of that had to do with, again, the whole thing of being ADD and being told all the things that we're told consistently.
Right.
See, I was never, nobody ever called, no one ever told me that I was ADD, but until I met you and kind of figured it out together. But I was always told, oh, you're lazy. Oh, if there's a shortcut to do something, you'll find it.
Yeah.
You know, and actually I always thought, gee, that's kind of a positive thing because I'll get it done faster than anybody else, you know. But that was a negative. It was a negative that the kids would get a toy and I'd look at the toy and I'd look at the picture and figure out how to put it together rather than look at the instructions.
Oh, me too. I never read instructions.
See, but
yeah.
That's a typical ADD thing of like we don't look at the instructions. We just look at it and put, okay, we can do this. put it together.
But the interesting thing is that, you know, you have Mike, my youngest, who is also on the spectrum,
right.
You know, with NLD, and he has to read instructions.
Right.
I mean,
well, so does my daughter. She reads them perfectly and can follow them every step.
Stephanie.
I can't do it. I can't do it at all.
So because when the kids were young,
right.
And Mike would get a new video game, Chris would be popping it in and playing it, and Mike would be reading the manual.
Right. Well,
to Chris.
I think it really worked great when I brought Stephanie to school. She goes to school at University of Kansas, and we got her this desk that was on sale. And it was this great-looking desk, and she looked at it, and we both looked at it and thought, wow, it's on sale. Maybe we better get this one, because it was really kind of elaborate with doors and glass doors, and it was really nice. It was very inexpensive. And once we got it back to her apartment, she then walked me through putting it together, because there's no way I could have ever done this by myself.
Right.
She went, okay, here's the first thing. And so she would just say, put that, you know, get this and that and put that together. So I'd do each step. And it worked out great.
Well, that goes hand in hand with when we first moved in together here, we went to IKEA.
Right, right.
And the first time we went to IKEA, we got stuff for the bedroom.
Right.
And you spent days putting that stuff together. And I was really impressed because you did it so well. But then the second time we went to IKEA, you have to picture this. Steve was the general manager of Warner Brothers Music. And so you can imagine how many albums he has. And he tells me that this is only half of what you used to have.
Yeah.
And now we've got books all over there were books all over the apartment too. And I'm thinking, oh, no, this isn't going to work. Because I don't like clutter.
Right.
Clutter makes me crazy. So we went back to IKEA, and I ended up buying wall units, for the living room and the kitchen, and I surprised him because I paid extra to have it delivered and put together. So
it was the greatest.
Right. This way, you know, we weren't procrastinating anything and,
right.
you know, sitting around and waiting for it to happen, and I didn't want to put that on to you because I didn't think that, you know, that was right to mm-hmm. do. And it was great because we got it done. We had a place for everything. The apartment looks great, and
right.
Hopefully at some point we're going to be moving out of here and, you know, into a house, which would be wonderful, but that's a process, and
right.
that and it all takes time. And that's the other thing is we do very well with money, you
right.
and I, and that's a big subject for couples
right.
is money.
Right.
We talk to each other. We're respectful. We don't
right.
just run out and buy stuff.
Right.
I make sure I ask, and he talks
right.
to me, and,
right.
hey, I was thinking about doing this, and we can say yes or no.
Well, yeah, we talk about, like I said, we can talk to each other about everything and anything. And also just, for example, like one of the other things we do is, I remember you were bringing it up because you were you said, hey, you know, I know you've got a bunch of stuff going on and I've got a bunch of stuff going on. And I said, you're right. I knew where you were going. We should talk about this. And let's talk about it and let's get a pad of paper and a pen, and we'll make notes and write down so that we knew, okay, I'm going to do, because I find it helpful.
Yeah, and we try to
we
do that.
About, we try to prioritize some things because we're all working on certain things, and we have two different views
right.
of things that how of what things need to be done, what things are more important than others. So there's a way to really talk about it, and we talk about it without any emotion, without getting emotional or anything like that. We're able to discuss all these, you know, what we need to do. Like, what are we going to do the next week?
But the sad thing, and this makes me sad, because still, sometimes when I ask you questions, you get defensive because you're still back
right.
in the past.
No, I know.
And I know that's difficult.
Yeah.
And I'm very empathic about that.
I'm working
on. Yeah, and I know that. But it's hard because I hate to see that.
Right.
Because I'm not going to question you and then, you know, get crazy.
I know.
So I think what we do, we try to do once a week where we sit down and
mm-hmm.
make a list of things that we're both working on.
Right, and what we're trying to get accomplished in the week, and it's great. It's
really right.
a good thing.
Right. So, you know, that's the other part of couples with ADD, if they can, whether you both have ADD, which I personally think is a lot easier, than
yeah,
one with ADD and one without?
Right. I definitely think it is, because it's just, I mean, I understand what you're going through. When something happens that upsets you, I understand how you can be, you know, how you can easily get in a loop and try to help you get out of the loop.
Right.
And a lot of times you'll say, look, you know, I'm one of the great things I just thought of, though, that you brought up, and it was something that I learned a long time ago. But you said whenever something came up in our relationship that bothered you, you usually sat with it for about a day.
Right.
Okay, and that was really important. And I learned that a long time in business, that when I got upset about somebody, something they did, I would usually wait a day.
Right.
Until I, like a subordinate that I disciplined, somebody on my staff that did something wrong, I usually wait a day or two so the emotion would calm down, so I wouldn't be angry and I wouldn't be upset.
Right.
Because when you do things in the heat of the moment, they usually come out much more extreme than you mean them to. And as someone once said to me, once you say things to someone,
you
can
can't
never
take
those words back.
No,
the damage
and so,
that they've done. And so you usually wait.
Well, this is a disability of regulation.
Right.
So one of the things that I worked on hard growing up, in working on growing up, was the ability to regulate my emotions. So what I noticed through that process was that if I got hurt was a big one, or sad, or angry, I would sit with those feelings for at least 2 days before I spoke about them. And the interesting thing was they weren't like a tidal wave anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the days went on, they became easier and easier to deal with, so that when I did present it, it was a lot easier for me to talk about it.
Right.
Without getting upset and getting crazy. And so that's one of the things that happens with you and I, is I'm able to, if I am upset about something, I can sit with it for, I don't have to do 2 days anymore. I can even sit with it sometimes for a half a day and then come and
Right.
Say, can I talk to you? And you always, here's the other thing, you always check in with your couple, with your husband or your wife. So, for example, you know, think about this. You know, you were married to somebody, I was, who would come flying through the door and immediately hit you between the eyes. You're doing something, you're in the middle of something, and they're upset about it. They didn't check in.
Right.
They didn't say, hey, is this a good time to talk, like we do?
Never, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's really respectful.
Mm-hmm.
Because just because you have something you want to talk about doesn't mean that the other person is ready to hear it. So what I tell couples that I work with is, if you ask that question, other person says, no, not now. In the next 24 hours, they have to give you a time that they can talk to you about it. Because if not, it becomes a big control issue.
Right.
And that's the other thing. There's no controlling here.
Right.
I mean, we don't do any of that because I gave up control about 4.5 years ago when I did all my work and recognized there was nobody I could control except myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't try to control you. You don't try to control me.
No, it's too exhausting.
It really
is. You know, I mean, I that's one of the things I learned a long time ago in trying to manage people, because I would manage entertainers. And I had a partner at the time, and he always wanted to control him. I kept on saying, you know, he would do things that would make us have absolute control over them. And I would go, you know, I can understand that as a ploy to hold on to a client, but I can't understand it as a ploy to get anything done, because ultimately everything always falls on you because you're controlling them. And that's just too much weight. That's just overwhelming to me.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, it's just too much responsibility.
No, it's true.
I don't want it. You know?
Yeah, and that's where you get, I think people get into trouble because, you know, you start trying to control every aspect of everybody in the house.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Not only...
Well, that's like like I said, it's great because if I have to go out to a function, I go out to the function. A lot of times I've got to get dressed up in a suit or,
right,
you know, whatever. I go out to these functions. I don't come home till late. I go by myself. It's a business thing. I'm not going there to you know, hang out or, you know, I don't know. It's not a pleasure thing. It's a business thing. And
right.
So because of that, I go by myself and I'm there as long as I need to be.
Right.
And then I leave.
Right.
It's that simple.
Right. And
you don't feel like, oh my God, he's leaving me out. And I mean, we talk about
God.
What it is. And, you know, like for example, the other night we went to, I had to go to a nightclub and see an act. And it was like late at night that the act
12:30.
Was 12:30. And we don't usually do that, but I mean, I used to do that every night of my life.
Right.
And the thing is that we went in there and we sat down and we had, you know, we were on the guest
Diet
list
Coke.
and we got a seat and which a lot of people didn't, you know, because I guess we were on the, we could go in a special section and all that, and we sat there and I kept looking over to you and I said, isn't this exciting? And it's like, other than the people watching, it literally is, it's very boring.
We were the oldest people in the play.
Yeah, well, one of, yeah, probably we were.
Yeah.
But the thing was is that most people think that kind of stuff is real exciting, and it sounds exciting, and when you read about it, it's exciting, and when you watch Entertainment Tonight, it sounds exciting, but most of the time, it's really boring. You're sitting there at a table waiting for something to happen, waiting to see for someone to come on the stage, and you're spending hours there doing nothing. It's just really, hard. It was really boring stuff. But we laughed.
We had a great time.
We looked at the people, and we people watched and stuff like that.
And it was great. We had a good time. We got home about 2:00, and then for two mornings after that, we were like dead to the world.
Yeah.
Because you know we're not 20 anymore. So, but you know, here's another thing that I noticed that couples get themselves in trouble with, and especially when you're impulsive, okay, and that's part of being ADD. So, you know, you're on Facebook, and you look up your husband or your significant other's page. And you see that there's a girl on there that's talking to him, and, you know, right away you're going to pin him up against the wall, or he's going to pin you up against the wall and say, who's this person and what? So here, I have a perfect remedy for this. Don't go on anybody else's Facebook page but yours, okay? Because if you really trust the person that you're with, you don't need to check their phone. My phone with my ex-husband was picked up all the time. I don't know why he was bothering checking mine because I wasn't having the affair. But, you know, that was projection.
I was going to say, I think they call that projection.
Exactly. But, you know, I'm not on Steve's page ever checking him out. I don't do that. I was laughing yesterday because he posted on his timeline that we were married, and I was laughing because I had never done that either. So it ended up that I did it on my timeline. And the thing was that I just consider, I always thought we were always married.
Yeah,
I mean, I just looked at it that way.
I just looked at it and saw that. I thought, oh, my gosh. And now I have to tell you something. It probably took me about 10 minutes to figure out how to change it.
I know.
I'm like, how do you do this again? I'll figure this out.
I know. So the point is that that's how you get yourself into trouble, because if you really trust the person that you're living with, then you don't have to check the things that they're doing. They love you. And for women who are listening, and this is really across the board, I can tell you what I'm getting ready to say is a generalization. When you give people permission to fly, that means when you're out, they can look at other women because they're not touching, they're only looking. You can look and laugh with them. When you give them permission to fly and do their thing, they're not going to leave you. Why would they?
Really? I mean, that is the thing. Given the opportunity to do, I mean, this is a, Justine and I can go places, and I can look at women. We both look at women. We look at guys. We look at anybody and everything. And the thing that most women don't seem to understand is that men look.
Right.
We look.
They're visual.
I mean,
right.
You know, it's just what we do.
Right.
And so, especially ADD people, even women who are ADD, I mean, they look.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with it. And
no.
The thing is that for someone to be embarrassed that they even looked, or they—I mean, I have friends
to attack the other person, like, oh, do you want to sleep with that person?
Oh yeah, well, I used to have, yeah, I had an ex that every time I would be looking and she'd catch me, she'd go, oh, do you want to sleep with that person? Is that what you're looking at them? Do you know them? What do you? And it's like, whoa, hold on, slow down.
Right, and that was the farthest thing from your mind.
Right. It
but
hadn't even occurred to me.
But when women behave like that, or men, it really causes resentment.
Right.
It causes things to grow that you don't want
to
grow.
You know, and I have to tell you, you know, it plants seeds that weren't even there.
Exactly. Maybe that one would keep her mouth shut. Maybe
yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know.
No. So, I mean, that's really grounds for trouble when you start going there. Everybody needs to really trust each other. Look, if you're married to somebody who's, you know, emotionally abusing you or is cheating on you and you can't trust them and you're in a place of fear, I need to tell you, you got to put your track shoes on and get out. You really do. You don't stay in an emotionally or verbally or physically abusive relationship. You don't do it. He and I did it for a long time. And we have nobody to blame for that but ourselves. We made the choice to stay. Why? We're still trying to figure that out.
Right.
But we did it. And now that we're in this relationship, we're seeing that there's another side to life where you can share your life with another person, and it's really about sharing your life.
Well, I think a lot of women don't understand that. And don't get me wrong. There are some men that are cheaters. There are some men that always feel – I mean, I've – been in, you know, around them all my life, but for most part, a lot of the guys that I know, if they were able to talk about things with their wife or look or whatever, I mean, if they were able to have open communication, they wouldn't feel like they had to hide anything.
Right.
And it's that hiding things that really is just, it's the beginning of all kinds of other things. We don't hide anything. I don't have to hide anything.
No.
I can do anything in front of you. I can talk to you about anything, and I get total acceptance from you.
Right.
And because of that, why on earth would I want to lose a person like this when I have had all the other ones that all they ever wanted to do was control me?
Right.
What, you know, or
right.
change me or train me or
right.
something like that. We
right.
accept each other for who and what we are.
Right.
Which is really
And I
great.
Think that one of the things you also recognize too, as I have recognized, is that part of what you saw after learning that you had attention deficit disorder was that you probably did some things in your marriage that caused issues.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's important because, and I did too. I mean, I said that in the beginning, you know, all the putting my emotions on other people, all that stuff. But I'm just talking about the ADD symptoms that you never recognized before that I'm sure would have caused some problems.
Oh, I can. I mean, I definitely think that my ADD had a tremendous amount to do with the demise of my second marriage.
Right.
I mean, without a doubt.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I can see it, all the various things that I did.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's good because you recognize that, and then you're able to take your part of responsibility.
Exactly.
But back then, you didn't have a clue that you were ADD.
Right.
So there was no, and I, you know, it's interesting because I meet a lot of people who come in to me and their kids are ADD and they sit in front of me and go, now, am I ADD? And they are, you know,
right.
but they feel like because I'm telling them that they are because, you know, here's the checklist and go ahead, check it off. They get upset and I'm trying to say to them, wait a minute, you getting upset certainly doesn't help your child at all. Okay. Your child has a gift. You have a gift. And this is why I think it's so important to order my book, okay, because, you know, it's a book that's full of highly, highly successful people, right?
Well, that was the thing.
Right.
One of the things when you were doing those discussions or those seminar, like a little group of seminars.
Oh, in the library.
In the libraries.
Yeah.
And you put together a
PowerPoint
presentation. And the very last slide were all the great people who had, all the famous people, successful people who had been diagnosed with ADD.
Right.
And the one thing I thought was just absolutely fascinating is how people would listen to your whole discussion. The number one thing they wanted to talk to you about was, can I get a copy of that? I got someone I want to show that to.
Right.
And I thought to myself,
that's what
my
started
goodness,
us putting the book together.
Exactly, because that's
right.
And so the book is, and when you have parents that have children that are, and most of your, well, a lot of your clients, the parents are highly educated.
Yep.
And they're very concerned about their child and their child's education. And yep. usually they're finding their way to your door because their child is doing very poorly in school.
Right.
And eventually they've gotten some kind of diagnosis from somebody
mm-hmm.
that they've got this ADD, and now they're thinking, oh, my God, it's the end of the world.
Right.
And so this book has all kinds of different categories of livelihoods or endeavors,
and all the people
that have been incredibly successful in these areas. And it's just a really simple picture book, but what it does is it opens up somebody's eyes. And we did it originally thinking it would be great for the kids to inspire them. But actually, at the same time, what we're finding is that the parents, it kind of puts them in a more comfortable place.
Yeah, because they
understanding that this is a gift.
Right.
And that there are many very, very successful people that have had this gift and have learned how to overcome negative circumstances or negative symptoms in order to excel.
You know, I had an interesting client this morning who was new, who came in to me because her daughter is a senior in high school and she wanted me to help her because the 504 plan that she's had for all these years, I think since sixth grade, has had two things on it. And I'm not going to go into that because I don't want to run the risk of, you know, confidentiality. But my point of the whole story is that here's the daughter who's so incredibly creative. She's a senior in high school. She's into drawing. She's into music. She's into dance. She's artist, like she just made a papier-mâché skeleton for something that she showed me a picture of. And the mother, who's ADD, and the father, who has ADD, was so excited that I was calling this a gift because they've been telling her for years that this is a gift, and she's never seen it that way. And because the school, don't get me started on the subject because I get really angry, has not done the right thing for this child is failing in school. Okay. Now, in college, she does want to go to an art school, which is great. I mean, that's going to be great for her. She doesn't have to worry about the mundane, boring subjects that she hates in school. But, you know, they told me some terrible stories this morning about things that had gone on, and it makes me really, really sad when I think that here's these kids that are just so incredibly creative. We are members of the elite population. As far as I'm concerned, there's nobody smarter than us. You put me up against a linear person any day, and I'll take them on, because my creative mind is above and beyond that linear and progressive and boring type of mind. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with some of these attorneys that I've met in my life, but, you know, or accountants, but seriously, I'm just kidding around about that. What I'm serious about is here were parents this morning who were excited that their child had ADD. They weren't crying in their soup and, oh, what is she going to do? They recognize the talents that she has and how, she's going to go on in her life and just be so successful and happy. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, and that's very different than a lot of the other people that come in.
Yeah.
Who are very frightened.
Well, a lot of times the parents are frightened, but they're and a lot of it also has to do with, I think, their feeling of wanting their child to be successful or wanting their child to measure, to fit into a boxes that they fit in, fit into. And that may be a bit of a control issue. I'm not sure. I know that once the parents start being exposed to these new things, the things that your book does kind of exposes all these career models. And they're able to see that that there's light at the end of time, and it's not just a light. It's a brand new day. It's a whole beginning that's there. So I think that's really important.
Right, and it's just endless, incredibly endless possibilities for all of these kids and all the adults, and even in the adult group, we see so many people that the growth that they're having is just incredible, and so much of it is overcoming the pain that they've been through in their lives related to many things that happened in their families with the ADD. For myself, growing up being labeled lazy, stupid, procrastinator, you know, that does wonders for your self-esteem, you know. So that's why I think, too, that when you don't grow up, as I didn't for many years, you get into relationships and you're not certain of what is going to happen, and you just kind of run into them impulsively, as you did also.
Right.
Not really thinking through, or, as you would tell me, thinking, I can fix this.
Right.
Right. I never thought that, but
well, it's not so much I could fix it. What I always thought is I could deal with it.
I could
deal with
it.
Because I dealt with all kinds of chaos.
Right.
And the problem was, is I didn't, and again, this goes back to that little saying you said, I guess I felt I deserved to have that and deal with that chaos.
Right.
It's interesting that, see, we too accept each other.
Right.
We accept when we forget things or when we're not attacking, we're not saying, oh, you did this again. Or,
right. I mean, no, we never
we're supposed
do that.
To do it because
right.
we're ADD.
Right.
So we laugh about it and we joke about it. And we don't get caught up in those pitfalls of having to find blame or accusation or who's right or who's wrong or any of those things.
Right. Because I think that anything that ever goes wrong can be fixed.
Right.
So, you know, if somebody leaves their keys home, well, we can fix it.
Right.
You know, the interesting thing is that I hate drama, and I lived with drama my whole life. I run from it now.
Right.
But, like, if I ever locked myself out of my car, which I doubt that's going to happen, but if I did, I could call you very calmly and say, hey, I lock myself out. Could you help me out?
Right.
And you say, yeah, okay, I'll be there. Or
right.
You're going to have to wait because I'm in Hollywood or wherever you are. And, you know, when I'm done with my meeting, okay. So I have to go to the coffee shop and sit and wait instead of screaming and yelling, what do you mean? I can't sit here. Well, see, this is what I say to people that tell me this stuff. You did that.
Right.
If I lock my keys in the car, then I have nobody to blame but myself for that.
Right.
And if Steve is in Hollywood at a meeting, so it's going to be 2 hours before he can get me, I guess I better figure out what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
Without yelling at him and blaming him and making him feel like he had anything to do with this. But I'm telling you, this is what people do, not only in this population. People in general want to get rid of those bad feelings of, I did something wrong. So they try to dump them on everybody else. Don't ever take that on. Don't do that. Don't let people do that to you, for those of you who are listening, because it's not good for you and it's not good for the other person. But you can kindly and gently talk to them. If you want to change one thing in the next week, if you feel yourself getting upset about your children's behavior, your husband, your wife's behavior, do yourself a favor. Just this one, next week, try this. Say, you know what, to whoever it is that you're talking to, I need a timeout. Go take a timeout. Your kids will love it. Your partner will love it. Your husband or wife will love it. Go take a timeout. Take it down. Breathe. Take some deep breaths. Get some meditation apps, thousands of them, at the app store. Get them. Put them on your phone. Put them on your iPod. Listen to them. They're very helpful. Mindfulness and meditation saved my life. And I really do believe that everybody can learn something from that. But if you take a time out, you're going to see a difference in your relationship, especially for those of us who struggle with emotional regulation. You know, and you're pretty, Steve, honest about how that's a struggle of yours at times. When,
oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You're good at taking that time out and taking that down. But when somebody interrupts you when you're in the middle of something, it's because you're afraid you're going to lose your place.
I still have difficulty with it. And that's one of the things that we talked about just recently that I'm working on. What was it? There was something I was trying to think of that. One time something happened to you and you didn't call me about it because you just took care of it.
When my battery died in my car?
That was it.
Yeah, my battery died. And instead of calling Steve, what I did was I called AAA. And we figured out that I had a free battery anyway coming.
Yeah, because we bought the last one through AAA.
Right,
yeah.
And I just came home and...
And you told me about it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, that happened to you. What happened? So, yeah, it was... You know, you told me about how reason why it took so long for you to get back was because AAA was, you know, you were waiting for them, and it turned out you got a free battery. And
Other thing I did know was the time that I had to go to the hospital because, remember last year in November? And I didn't ask you to come home.
Right.
You were at a film festival.
Right.
And I had a friend come and get me.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
and I
right.
never called you, but you did come. Yeah. Right. So this is great. Thank you so much to my husband. I love you for being on
this
show.
Yeah, I love you all the time anyway. So.
And I know, and you're producing at the same time, which is great. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you want to listen to this show, you can go to iTunes tomorrow. It'll be posted under Justine Rutolo. Miss ADD. Again, if anybody's interested in ordering my book, please go to my website, missadd.com. I also have T-shirts on there that say the gift of ADD, so you certainly can order them as well. And I will certainly be back next week. We're going to have a great show with the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus Clown. He doesn't do it anymore, but he's retired and in my adult support group, and he's going to spend a lot of time talking about how juggling really calms him down, and he's going to write a book about being a clown, and also he wants to get involved in the different school systems trying to bring the juggling to the schools so the kids that have attention deficit can learn how to take it down, and I think that's going to be exciting. So please tune in next Sunday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I want to thank everybody again. And remember, please, everybody, to stay in the moment. Thanks for being part of the show. I was listening to his music.